we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the autumn news sheet from the Marsden Centre in Nelson, read by Peter Donaldson.
We need to say a huge thank you to users, staff and management for their willingness to accommodate us during our toilet renovations. Problems have been encountered, and this has extended our squat to 5.5 weeks.
And our thanks to Michael Blomley for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Simon Evans. And opposite them on my left, Jeremy Hardy and Stanley Johnson. Now, Francis, I bet you can't guess the topic for the first question.
Oh, try me.
Whose week in Manchester was far from a labour of love?
I think it's the latest gig, isn't it, on Tony's farewell tour, stadium tour. Did you see he had Mick Hucknall as a kind of warm-up?
He's not looking well, Hucknall, is he? He's starting to look like Keith Richards' scrotum, really.
How familiar are you with Keith Richards' scrotum?
He looks like an explosion in a pubic hair factory, actually, if you really want to know. But
why would you make pubic hair in a factory?
You wouldn't.
It's good for filling cushions.
Hydroponics.
Serious political question.
No, it wasn't. It was about Tony Blair and
John. I apologise, you're quite right.
And Clinton came to talk to them. He came up with some African word, Ubuntu?
Ubuntu, yeah.
Which means, I am because you are. And they were really impressed by this. It's a wonderful sort of peacemaking word. And I thought, actually, that's the standard line that comes out in domestic arguments. Like, why are you so angry? I am because you are. it's not a nice thing.
I think they all went to sleep during Clinton. It's not a legacy. He actually bored the pants off the Labour delegates.
Well, no, I think with the women, he'd something else to their pants, so I don't think it was...
Do you think Cherie deliberately got overheard saying that's a lie? She's a clever woman. I think it's wrong that people just depict her as being the Prime Minister's wife, because she has also built a very successful career as the Prime Minister's wife.
I think what's extraordinary is how everybody gave Blair sort of full marks for this speech.
24 hours after Gordon Brown's incredible troll through a sequence of inconsequential facts and misty, nebulous nonsense, it seemed like the greatest oratory since Cicero, didn't it? I mean, I think if you put it into any more reasonable context than that, you'd see it for the windbaggery it was.
Yeah, but why did...
But he was so desperate for a little bit of style over content after Gordon Brown.
Well, the surprise of the conference, I think, has been John Reed.
Throwing, in what sense?
Throwing his hat into the ring. He needs a hat, of course.
He's horrible, though, isn't he, John Reid?
Well, let me go talk to any Muslim. You like it? Listen to us today. You live in our country, play with our rules. Like, shut up, listen to me. All right, I'm the Home Secretary.
If I might say to my colleague here, he does raise a very serious point. Whether it's John Reid or whether it's Gordon Brown, and the reality is, the next 4 years, we're going to be governed by a Scotsman who is not going to be that easy to understand.
And our apologies to our listeners in the north. Question was, in fact, about this week's Labour conference, which was overshadowed by leadership rivalry and Cherie Blair's mouth. Simon, which intelligence report hasn't gone down a bomb with Bush or Blair?
Well, this is, I think, a couple at least of documents have been released showing that Tony Blair was warned before the war that invading Iraq would be likely to increase the chances of terrorism, and the CIA have said that this has, in fact, been the case. So that seems to be nicely bookended. Blair's point has been clearly made, that there's no point in expecting terrorism to increase in the UK, since there is clearly no point in invading Iraq in order to reduce terrorism. It's a QED.
It had never been that clear to me before.
Still, although it's increased terrorism, and although there were no weapons of mass destruction, at least we've brought peace and stability to Iraq.
That's true.
I love Bush's reaction to this this intelligence report. He said they're trying to confuse the American people. He's like the people on the Poseidon Adventure who are going the wrong way. Don't listen to them. They're trying to trick you with this truth-talky stuff.
Well, they weren't going the wrong way on the Poseidon Adventure. The boat had turned upside down.
No, some were going the right way to go up through the hull.
You had to go the wrong way.
I have got a degree in history, Stanley. Some were going...
I think you've been quite fair on Bush, as a matter of fact, apropos this intelligence report, because he at least has said, let it be published.
It was actually called Trends in Global Terrorism. Do you not think it sounds like a sort of what next year's terrorist will be wearing?
I will ignore that one and wait till the sale one comes around. Yeah.
It was a report subtitled America's National Intelligence Estimate, which I'm going to guess is quite low. 2 points there to Simon Stanley, who chose the open door rather than an Eastern Bloc.
The good news this week is that the European Commission, meeting in Strasbourg, has finally said, yes, Bulgaria and Romania can join, which means you don't have to rely on Polish plumbers any longer. You can have Bulgarian and Romanian plumbers. I've got a particular interest in Romania, because most of my books have been Romaniaed over the... over the years.
Does it mean that the entire Eastern Bloc is blocked, as it were? There's no plumbers at all? Is that what you're saying?
Well, when I was standing as a candidate last year in Devon, one of the big issues in my constituency to be, which didn't happen, was the absence of Polish plumbers. So I said, yes, we do have two Polish plumbers. One's in Bobby Tracy, one's in Newton Abbot, and we call it the North Pole and the South Pole.
But this influx of people from Poland has already caused controversy because it's put enormous strain on racists. Because most of these people are white, which has really disoriented the extreme right in the country, because the whole of the extreme right from the 50s onwards was built around the idea of colour. It's much easier to organise your activists if you only had to show them pictures. And then, of course, black and Asian people assimilated, became part of the fabric of the country. You know, extreme right has to think again, and Islamophobia became the favoured prejudice. But now you've got an influx of people who are not only white, but Christians. And what are fascists going to do? Mm. These whites coming here, fitting thermostatic valves to our radiators.
I was trying to think what I knew about Romania, and all I could think of was, is it not Vlad the Impaler, who was the model for Bram Stoker's Dracula?
Yeah, Transylvania, yeah.
Yeah, he comes from Romania. Do you know the thing about how Vlad was murdered? It's quite unpleasant. The side of his cheeks were cut, and his whole face was pulled off.
Yeah. Oh, I hate when that happens.
It's a very...
It's called scalping. I mean, we know it as Anne Robinson, but it's the same sort of...
My favourite bit from the whole story was that there is in the European community, or whatever it's called, somebody called the Commissioner for Enlargement. He's the one who...
Yes, he's a very
he's
large...
He's the one who announced... He's clearly been sending me all those emails over the last few years as well, so they...
He was a very large German called Fritz Bolkestein, and he did a good job, actually.
Did you know, in the Parliament, did you know Otto von Habsburg?
He was a very good friend of mine, Otto. One day, Austria was playing Hungary at football, and he came up to me and said, "Who is Austria-Hungary playing?"
The original question was to do with the European Union, which has chosen to allow Romania and Bulgaria to accede to the EU, subject to strict conditions aimed at stamping out corruption. Apparently, the report said that the Bulgarian government had done little or nothing to investigate corruption at the highest level, and certainly they've come to the right country to sort that kind of thing out. Jeremy, this is my favourite story of the week. Who's left feeling sore by a Brazilian?
Well, this is a story about the Brazilian cleaner. I, first of all, I didn't realise she was from Brazil. I thought it was a kind of cleaning where they hoover most of the rug but just leave a strip down the middle. Starts off, there's two judges who are immigration adjudicators and they're having a sexual relationship. Probably quite
this is
good.
A male judge and a female judge.
Male judge and a female judge. And we only know that she was Miss J, but we know that his name was Mr. Carden now.
Yeah. Are judges like hurricanes? Are they just named in alphabetical order?
Yeah.
But they were having a sexual relationship. Then they broke up, but they kept the same cleaner as a kind of sentimental bond. something that they would always share. And then... he has a relationship with the cleaner, but he's not only a judge, he's a recorder, because she finds tapes in the house of, I can have you killed. he's videoed himself having sex. Why would you video something like that? It's not as if you're ever going to watch it, are you? Do you know what I mean? It would have to be a very rainy night in, wouldn't it?
She stole it, didn't she?
She stole it, which spares him...
I don't think that was the most shocking thing. I mean, the bit I couldn't get my head round was having a cleaner who dusts shelves. I mean, she I've never known them to touch anything on a shelf.
How do you know whether they've cleaned your shelves, just as a matter of interest?
Me? I can't tell.
No. That's what I was thinking.
They spend a lot of time on your skirting board.
Yes, indeed, two senior immigration judges, Mohammed Ilyas Khan and the anonymous Miss J, could lose their jobs after Rosalind Riza, their Brazilian cleaner, on trial for blackmailing them, made allegations about their drug-fueled sex lives. And during the case, Mrs. Riza, apparently, said that she feared Miss J was going to have her killed, which I thought was absurd. I mean, the idea of a Brazilian being assassinated by the authorities in this country is...
Well, one poor Brazilian did get killed, if
really?
You remember.
That was impressive.
I wish I kept up. Now, at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Stanley have got 5, but Francis and Simon are just in the lead with 6. Shall we start round two with a cutting from the Matlock Mercury?
Hard of Hearing Club. The AGM of the club was held in the Imperial Rooms Matlock on Monday, March the 6th. A minute's silence was held at the start of the meeting.
Thanks to Viv McDonald for spotting that. Francis, have a listen to this. Point straight away, if you can tell me what it is.
Well, it's a national anthem based on I Thought I Saw a Putty Cat.
That's entirely correct. It's the national anthem of Australia. The question is, who's a lot softer down under than they used to be?
As Michael Mark Latham, who used to be the leader of the Labour Party, scandalised Australia by saying that all Australian men, the old-fashioned good Australian bloke, the Aussie bloke...
What they call a larrikin.
A larrikin, is extinct, driven out of business by metrosexual...
Metrosexual knobs.
Knobs.
Metrosexual tosspots. I think I saw some of those in Habitat earlier, actually.
it's complete...
In chrome or cow print.
What does metrosexual mean? You do it with tube tape.
It means you wear sarongs, basically. You're in touch with your feminine side, I think.
And in Australia, it means you buy the sheep a drink first.
Yes.
The Australian male is fighting back. I've got 10 Australian nephews and 8 Australian nieces, and I do not detect a lot of metrosexual nerds.
But you're not looking closely enough, Stanley, because you know the hats that they wear with the corks all the way around? 9 out of 10 of those corks are now from Rosé.
And also because we've got the Ashes series coming up in a couple of months. Did you see Cricket Australia put out an announcement
this
week
saying
that you can say pom, that's allowed, but you mustn't attach, they said, any derogatory or offensive or hurtful adjective to it. And anyone who's cricket ground in Australia who says that to an English fan will be chucked out. So the Australian fans can say, you pom, you.
I didn't understand this at all in the press. It said that pom comes originally from pomegranate. I read that pomegranate was it was rhyming slang for immigrant, and you just think,
no, it's not.
No, it's more assonance, isn't it? Assonantial slang is not very popular.
Which kind?
Assonant is the adjective from assonance, which is a, that kind of rhyme.
Simon, really? Don't come here with your degree and trying to show up Stanley.
No. would be a fairly free rhyme, pomegranate, isn't it?
Free
it
rhyme,
would.
That'd be generous. Isle of Thanet, that rhymes with pomegranate.
Do you know, in my whole life, if I was struggling, the words Isle of Thanet would never appear in my...
That probably is rhyming slang for pomegranate.
Well, you mentioned Isle of Thanet, and it just brings me back as before. A couple of years, I once applied to be a candidate for the Isle of Thanet, and the chairman said, Mr. Johnson, name me one thing you know about the Isle of Thanet. And I said, I'm afraid you've got me stumped there.
In his new book, Australia's former Labour Party leader Mark Latham laments the end of the typical Australian male, or larrikin, replaced by what he calls metrosexual knobs or tossbags. That was 2 points to Francis. Simon, why are doctors hoping for more space to operate?
This is to do with weight-free operations.
No, it's pomegranates. Honestly.
Is it? Weight-free operations, which, of course, has been the promise of NHS for some time now, but they've actually performed... Yes, I apologise. They have performed an operation in a sequence of 20-second bursts during the weightlessness created by diving through a parabola in a specially adapted Airbus. Mm. That's not a sentence I would have anticipated saying.
The other passengers must have got pretty nuts.
Yes. They want to be sure that if there is an emergency on board the space lab, or whatever it is currently called, that they will be able to perform it.
Don't we have enough choice in hospitals? I mean, it's one thing when the doctor says, do you want to go to Bart's or Tommy's? But when it's all space.
Yes.
I mean, and the parking's not going to be good for visitors up there, is it?
French doctors, led by Professor Dominique Martin, have carried out the world's first zero-gravity surgery, removing a benign tumour from the arm of 46-year-old Philippe Chinchou whilst travelling on a specially adapted plane, apparently affectionately known to trainee astronauts as the Vomit Comet. This is absolutely true. Professor Martin had hoped to perform space surgery using a robot. Last year he developed a robot which has all the skills of a top Harley Street surgeon, but sadly he wasn't able to perform the operation in the end because it had tickets for the first night of La Traviata.
Hang on, you can't take sharp things on a plane.
Stanley, who lost his round but may yet win the fight?
Oh, I know what we're talking about. We are talking about a postman, a wonderful postman. And he wisely thought that he was fed up with delivering all this junk mail. Apparently we have 14.5 billion items of junk mail delivered each year in the United Kingdom. This fellow wisely reminded his, I was going to say constituents, that that's not the right word, the people you deliver mail to.
Householders.
People, yeah. He said... He told them, A, you're entitled not to get this junk mail, and B, here's a number which you can ring so that you don't get it. It's called the Please Don't Send Me Junk Mail telephone number. Well, the post office was so fed up, because apparently the post office gets a huge amount of money from sending out junk mail. Anyway, they tried to sack this fellow, and his commissioners, his parishioners... you know what I'm trying to get at.
I do, darling.
All wrote in and said he mustn't go. And the post office finally said, we're going to let him stay. So basically a very interesting story, very important story, and leads on, of course, to the whole question of post office closure.
Well, that's really tragic, because these villages where the post office is being closed just when it was finally being accepted...
I get very annoyed with all the charity demands. There's one in particular called the Inland Revenue, who are constantly... and they don't even send a pen, which I think is cheeky, to be honest, you know?
The story was about a Welsh postman, Roger Annies, who lost his round after telling householders how to stop junk mail from being sent to them. He was particularly annoyed to be suspended because he'd been doing his round for 10 years, very nearly got to the end of it. So it's 2 points to Stanley. Jeremy, which station has lost its link with reality?
Station as in television channel?
Mm-hmm.
Is this the iDents?
It is, yeah.
Peter Fincham, who's a very important man who controls BBC One. We can say what we like about the people who run the BBC because they don't know that they have an arm that makes radio programmes. they don't know that every year the BBC is shelling out 40 or 50 quid on Radio 4. So go ahead, Peter, spend 1.2 million on some utterly needless little... Why can't we just have AJP Taylor sitting in black and white and saying, now on the BBC Home Service, another programme. We hope you'll find it interesting.
I'd just like to raise a voice against that. I think they're very nice, the iDents. In fact, I think they're probably better than most of the programmes that precede them. And,
but they're all circles, that's what it costs so much, isn't it? It's really clever because you've got a surfer, but the wave makes a circle, and then there's the hippos, and there's something else which makes it. And so the circle is the BBC One logo. So it's like the old globe, and the same old stuff goes round and round again and again, and that's what BBC One viewers are used to.
BBC One has spent £1 million on rebranding its links between programmes with a series of 10-second films, including Dancing Hippos, Stunt Kites. That's a combination of words you need to be watchful over. At the end of round two, Francis and Simon have got 10, and so have Jeremy and Stanley. Before we start round three, here is a cutting from the Basingstoke Gazette.
A court has heard that a phony tree surgeon aroused suspicion in a potential victim when he offered to prune her telegraph pole.
And thanks to Fraser Reveal, who sent that in. Francis, who believes that one day surgeons, like the Lord, will come like a thief in the night?
Oh, I think it's the British Criminology Review or some such journal has run a piece
And they say that burgling should be reclassified as a profession, like surgery and being an airline pilot, because all these people showed they did very complex tasks with a high level of skill. Karl Marx wrote a brilliant piece showing that criminals were the most productive labourers in the country, that without them the economy would come to a standstill, because no criminals, no crime, you don't have the police force, you don't have lawyers, you don't have judges, you don't have judges employing Brazilian cleaners. You have absolutely, the whole thing's wiped out, all culture is dead. You don't have anything from Inspector Morse to Tony Soprano.
Last of the summer wine, though.
You get last, that's all you would have. You would have Last of the Summer Wine and Patricia Hewitt in employment, and that would be the country. That's all you get. So without crime. And that's what these burglars at last are getting their due. They're getting official recognition for their skills.
I'd be a bit worried about having... They actually suggested that they could retrain them as surgeons. And you think, well, it's one thing to walk past the second-hand car stereo shop and recognise your own car stereo, but if you saw your kidneys in there, that could...
Do you think it'll get to the point where they won't do house calls either? Do you think it'll get to the point?
To lose your video, press 1. For jewellery, press 2. For feces on your carpet, press 3.
A study called Expert Decision-Making in Burglars by Portsmouth University Psychologists claims regular burglars show such skill and expertise that if their gifts were put to better use, they could be as talented as surgeons. Whereas, presumably, if surgeons put their skills to better use, I wouldn't have a £2,000 Rolex lodged next to my small intestine. Simon, who got a new toy car, but at a far from dinky price?
Well, this is the very dubious, in my opinion, story about a young boy, I think age 3, who apparently went onto eBay and bought himself what was described as a Barbie pink Nissan Figaro. And apparently his mum found out the next day that he'd bought this car for £9,000. And I just don't buy it myself, to be honest. I think she bought it and then had a massive row with her husband, and in order to get out of having to pay for it, it pretended that the 3-year-old had bought it.
What a cynical approach to the news.
Yeah. And I expect he's probably got a few memberships of a few international websites that he might want to blame on the young boy as well when they come to light. I'm sorry, I've got a 2-year-old. We're pleased with her. She seems advanced for her age, but I haven't noticed her browsing the auto section of eBay lately.
Still, a deal's a deal. That's what I say. Don't let the kid off.
Well, the seller was very relaxed about it. When the boy's mother rang the seller, instead of being annoyed and thinking they got 9,000 quid, I said, "Oh, that's all right, we've all got children and they've all done bad things or tiresome things from time to time," said Baroness Thatcher.
apparently, somebody makes a purchase on eBay every second, and that somebody is Cherie Blair. 3-year-old Jack Neal from Lincolnshire used his mother's computer to buy a £9,000 car on internet auction site eBay. 2 points to Simon Stanley. Tell me why female sporting ability may be digitally enhanced.
Apparently, those women who have ring fingers much longer than their index finger happen to have much greater sporting ability.
But only tiddlywinks.
No.
It's because men apparently have longer ring fingers than index, and women are the other way around. But if you're a woman with a longer index figure, you have more testosterone. That's... And then you can come on East German.
Which is supposed to be longer if you're a bloke.
And testosterone.
Yeah. No.
My point about testosterone, apparently, the more hair you have on your head, the less testosterone you have. And the people who have less hair have more points.
That was made up by bald people to seem good. Yes, what it is, it's the hormones pushing the hair out of my hair. There's just so much testosterone, the hair can't stand it. It goes out of my hair, head, and into my ears and nose.
I'm worried now. My ring finger's so short, it's a wonder I can walk.
I'm a lady.
Oh, darling, thank God you caught up with the rest of us. Now, Jeremy, who likes breakfast fit for a king?
Well, apparently, Prince Charles, when he has his eggs in the morning, apparently, his surf... his eggquiry has to do 7 eggs, which is annoying because there's 6 in a box. But he has to have 7 eggs, and the reason given was that only one of them will be exactly cooked to the right consistency. I suspect it takes him 7 goes to open one.
It's just a completely different life, isn't it? I remember years ago, The lovely late Patrick Litchfield told me a wonderful story about what it was like to be brought up by a nanny. And it was during the war, and they had gone to the Ritz for tea, and he was quite a young lad. And there was a bomb, and part of the ceiling of the Ritz came down, and everybody dived under the tables. And when the dust had settled, he came back up, and he said, "Nanny, was that a bomb?" And she said, "Yes, dear, elbows off the table." In his new book on royalty, Jeremy Paxman reveals that Prince Charles is served 7 boiled eggs in order that he can find one with a yolk cooked to the correct consistency. Paxman did not reveal whether Charles likes to dunk soldiers in his egg. Oh, there's so many ways I could now take that remark. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
This is from the Summerfield magazine, the supermarket Summerfield. They have a page called Star Turns, in which top stars reveal their culinary secrets. Mel Jidroich, who is asked, "What are you having for tea?" She says, "I'm going to try the children with sardines on toast."
Simon.
This is from a website which advertises tickets for the Georgia Aquarium in Atlanta and gives the following warning. There is no outside food or beverage allowed in the aquarium. Children must be accompanied by an adult. Please remember that there are no guns, knives, lighters, matches or fishing poles permitted in the Georgia Aquarium.
Stanley.
Mine's about a story I read in the Daily Mail today. A lady who can't start her car because the immobiliser chip has been lost. And an AA man discovers that the dog has swallowed the chip. He placed the dog in the front seat, and at the turn of the key, the engine started after being activated by the chip in George's stomach. Now the couple from Addlestone, Surrey, face having to drive around with their lively pet in the front passenger seat until nature takes its course.
Jeremy.
This was sent in by Stella Lewis. It's a letter to the Bournemouth Echo, and it says, "Orgone is an invisible, naturally occurring, life-giving form of energy that permeates the universe. In order to achieve the required concentration of orgone, it has been necessary to meditate within confines of a lead container known as a Faraday cage, which filters out all forms of unwanted energy. For reasons not yet clear, however, it has recently been shown that a good stout wardrobe works equally well."
The final scores, Jeremy and Stanley have got 13, but this week's winners are Francis and Simon with 15 points.
Yes!
Before we leave you, here is a quote from a bird flu survivor found on the BBC website by Tom Rogers.
"I also look out for any slightest symptoms of bird flu in my family. I'm watching like a hawk," he said.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Wheen, Simon Evans, Stanley Johnson and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chair's script was written by Simon Littlefield, Roderick Crooks and George Poles. And the producer was Katie Tyrrell.